The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
EU leaders have backed new sanctions against Iran following last weekend's attack on Israel. During talks in Brussels on Wednesday, they decided to direct sanctions at Tehran's drone and missile producers. These were used extensively in the assault. The leaders also discussed the wars in Gaza and in Ukraine.
It's the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, DW News reporting that the EU is coming together to sanction Iran. What's that mean for the conflict in the Middle East? We'll explore that more coming up. Got a lot to get into today. Good afternoon. I'm Drew Mariani. So good to be with you. I got a special guest stopping by about an hour. Father Richard Simon. Yeah, he's been out and under the weather. If you are a regular listener of his show, you probably know that I might have heard this episode before. He really wants to get back. I had an opportunity when I was leaving the studio yesterday. I was in my car. I gave him a quick call, and he's just so grateful for everyone's prayers. I mean, he really is just so grateful to you. And he says, is it possible to come on your show? I'm like, Father, you can come on anytime you want, right? I'd love to have you come on the show. I often hate asking him to do double duty. He'll do his broadcast block, and then I come on, and sometimes I'm like, hey, can you come on to talk about this? So he's going to stop by at 3 Central, 4 Eastern. It's about an hour from now if you want to join us. He'll bring you up to speed on, I guess, whatever he wants to relate to you. And then, of course, thank you for his prayer, for the prayers you've offered. They are working, and he needs them. This is a man. I was just talking to Nick Sentovich. That's his producer. And Nick was saying, this is a guy who's like never been in a hospital bed before, you know, and he's really been under the weather. So let's pray for him, and let's pray for all the sick. We'll pray the chaplet. Speaking of that, about 55, 56 minutes. All right. And we'll pray together. So I'd love to welcome you to that. If you've never prayed with me or got your intention on the air, put this number in your speed dial right now. Okay. And you can use it a little bit later to get in. And phone lines fill up very quickly. The number's 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. It's good all day too. You can join me here for the broadcast with that number as well. And of course, Maggie is on our Twitter page, or our X account, as we call it today. You can send her a post. And if you want to do that now, you'll jot down that really important intention. She'll put her eyes on it and she'll give voice to it for you. And the handle for our X platform is at Drew Mariani Show. At the Drew Mariani Show. Follow me at Drew Mariani. And also on all of our social media, you can follow us at facebook.com and, of course, YouTube. We'll be streaming the show live. So if you want to get a peek into our virtual world, you can certainly do that too. All that's coming up. So looking forward to it. But we got a lot to get into this afternoon, though. New York Times reporting that the United States and Britain have imposed new sanctions on the Iranian military leaders and all of these weapons manufacturers today. It's an effort to punish Tehran for its missile and drone attack on Israel last week. And you heard that reported just at the top of the show here. At the same time, right, you got Britain, you got the U.S., they are imploring Israel, hey, please. That's probably not how they're saying it, but they're basically saying, do not retaliate, right? This could set off a stronger war. And I mentioned to you yesterday what Iran said. Iran says, if you do this, we're not waiting 12 days. We're coming at you. They want to wipe Israel off of the face of the map. They've said it before. They want to do it again. So White House officials said that the sanctions were aimed at disrupting Iran's ability to produce the unmanned aerial vehicles, and that it, you know, that's what their military used to attack Israel. And they were slow moving. But here's the thing. I saw a report earlier today. I heard a general or some high-ranking military official. He says the U.S. has already spent $1 billion in the missiles that we fired off to bring down drones, to bring down all these attacks on our ships, as well as that war. $1 billion. It's a lot of money. So we'll see where this goes. You know, I do get a little bit concerned, to be honest with you, about our military supplies. Lieutenant Colonel Dakota Wood was on my program a couple months ago, and we talked about the Ukrainian war and how much weaponry we were sending there. I just want to make sure that if there is a conflict in Taiwan or somewhere else that we get pulled into, we're set. The U.S. Secretary of Treasury, Janet Yellen, she's quoted in the report from TRT World News. She talks a little bit about the sanctionings now ratcheting up Iran. Listen to this.
The pressure is rising, and Iran, the most sanctioned country in the world until Russia's 2022 invasion of Ukraine, is likely going to face even more financial strain following an unprecedented coordinated aerial attack on Israel.
With respect to sanctions, I fully expect that we will take additional sanctions action against Iran in the coming days. From this weekend's attacks to the Houthi attacks in the Red Sea, Iran's actions threaten the region's stability and could cause economic spillovers.
While the 2006 UN sanctions over its nuclear program were terminated in 2016, the U.S. reinstated its own sanctions in 2018, mainly targeting the Iranian financial and energy sectors. Since then, Iran has expanded its exports to include weapons.
Yeah, I don't understand the mindset of this nation. Sanctions are going to try to block exports by Iran's steel industry that will ultimately brings Tehran about billions of dollars in revenue. I don't think economic. We'll see what happens. We will see what happens. Pray for peace. I'll go back to that mantra again. Right, pray for peace. If we cut off all these global transactions with companies and individuals involved with building these type of weapons, if you cut off, you know, the economic and monetary inflow to this nation, it will have an effect. But gosh, we need conversion of heart, don't we? They hate Israel. They hate Israel, and they're trying to flex their muscles in the Middle East. Yeah, believe it or not, I think the latest conflict reset the meter for the U.S. It does show our military capabilities and our might, and you can see that with a follow-up email regarding Iran when Iran came out and told Israel do not retaliate and warned the U.S. in all caps, you know, to stay out of this. They don't want to wrangle and entangle with us. And I don't think these policies of appeasement are very effective. But anyway, that's that. One other thing that I found very telling just regarding Iran and pray for Iran, temporarily closed their nuclear facilities this week over, quote, security considerations. What does that mean? Well, it means they could be targeted by Israel in an airstrike in retaliation for Iran's unprecedented missile and drone barrage. But the head of the International Atomic Energy Agency is a guy named Rafael Grossi. He told the UN Council, Security Council meeting, that their inspectors in Iran were informed by Iranian government officials that all nuclear facilities that they're inspecting every day would remain closed on security considerations. Where Israel strikes, and I don't want to talk too much about this today, to me it's kind of curious. I think a lot of our allies, we'd love to see their nuclear program set back. But there may be other areas that will be targeted. We'll see. I definitely believe that Israel will strike. How soon? I don't know. Grossi actually kept inspectors back on Monday for fears that Israel would actually hit the facilities after Iran launched those missiles. And again, that's the first time that country has ever directly attacked Israel. So often they've done it through their proxies. So things are getting hot. They are getting hot. Hey, let's talk about what's happening here at home. Illinois' legislature. The state of Illinois, right in the heart of our nation, right? The land of Lincoln. Let's pray for Illinois. So many of the policies here are not. They are considering a bill to legalize assisted suicide. How is that a good thing? How is that a good thing? You know, the state's Catholic Conference here, and I want to applaud them. They're strongly opposing the measure. They're encouraging any Catholic in the state of Illinois, okay, write to your state legislators in opposition to the bill. Okay, and now I talk about sacrifice. I talk about prayer. I talk about penance. I talk about all the things we can do. It's a pain, isn't it, to stop, to sit down, to find out who my local representative is, jot an email, to write a letter. Yeah, it's a time suck, and you got better things to do with your time, right? Make it a sacrifice. I'm saying to anybody in Illinois, anybody in the land of Lincoln, all right, find out who your elected official is. And do what the Catholic Conference in Chicago or in Illinois is asking you to do. Get a hold of them and tell them that you believe that our lives don't belong to ourselves, that they're a gift from God, that we don't have the authority or the ability to take any life, and that this is wrong, and that you won't put them back in office. They advance the culture of death in this particular state. So, I think it's great. Robert Gilligan is the executive director of the state's Catholic Conference, and he told Chicago Catholic that very thing. He says he's concerned about four things. One, coercion. Of course, that happens. Two, the role of insurance companies. You think insurance companies want to keep you on life support? You think they want to continue to give you medical care, you know, if you're diminishing? You know, we got the old slippery slope argument, too. All right, well, we're only going to take the life of people who meet this criteria, right? Whatever the criteria is this time. And then it gets redefined, gets a little muddy, begins to slip away. And then what happens to, here's another thing that's so strange. I should get a psychiatrist or psychologist on to talk about this. The old suicide contagion. Yeah, I think it's more than something that's psychological. I think it's spiritual. Satan hates you. He hates life. He loves to distort. He loves abortion. He loves euthanasia. So if you are in Illinois, do it today. All right. Open the internet, find out who it is, call. I don't have a number here. I probably should have my team look for the state legislature in Illinois. You can call their 800 number. Patrick Alog, who's on my phones, he's pretty good at that. Patrick, maybe you can find the number for me and put it in my stack here, and I'll share it with everyone. But let them know you opposed the bill. At least you can stand before God when you're done, right, and say, you know, I did my part. So easy to listen to me talk. Right? And to hear about these things or watch them in the news or read about them in the paper and think, oh, that's really horrible. I hope that doesn't happen. And we do nothing. We're like a bunch of ostriches. We stick our heads in the sand. No. Be proactive. I'm encouraging you today to do this. Tell you, your voice makes a difference. It makes a big difference. Here's the number for anyone. This is for the state of Illinois, Patrick. This is 217-782-2000. So wherever you are right now, if you're at home, your office, in your car, and you can do it, put this in your cell phone, 217-782-2000. How about shutting down the switchboard right now? Call them up, telling them no, you know, telling them you want them to respect life at every stage. 217-782-2000. That is the number there. And stand with the state's Catholic College, who is strongly opposing this measure to legalize assisted suicide in the state of Illinois. We might have a victory, right? Our prayers and our actions, I think they bring about change. Kyle Seraphim, does that name sound familiar to you? Yeah, that Maggie's a nod in her head. The former FBI agent who blew the whistle on the agency's tagging so-called radical traditional Catholics. Well, can somebody explain to me, what is a radical traditional Catholic, right? What is an RTC? Well, they'd like you to believe they're terrorists, potential terrorists. You know, that's what they said in a piece for the Federalist, that the Richmond memo is just the start. He believes the FBI will eventually start going after faithful Christians. I'll be honest with you, I find this hard to believe, maybe because I'm a man of hope, maybe because I believe in America, maybe because I believe in freedom, maybe because I'm myopic or childlike, or, you know, I'm not really seeing things the way they are, but that's what he believes. And let me just share with you what he said. He said, quote, the FBI is establishing a gateway in which they think is, quote, fringe Catholicism. This is a new term for me. Never heard of fringe Catholicism. And he says it's a means to go after Christians in general and declare them to be real threats and potential terrorists in the country. It sounds like something you'd read in a paper, if they had them 2,000 years ago, as early Christianity was spreading, right? We are real threats. We are potential terrorists. Christians, Catholics. Slowly but surely, he says, the FBI is probing its way into all religious communities, and all Christians are in the crosshairs. They may be gung-ho on the RTC now, but the idea of them targeting so-called radical Baptists or radical Lutherans in the near future, he says, that is certainly on the table. And it's true. You think, oh, well, that's not me they're going after. I'm glad I'm not a Catholic, right? Hey, they're going to be knocking on the Lutheran door, the Baptist door, and everybody's door. Food for thought. All right, that's food for thought. That I thought was very, very telling. Catholic Vote has provided a few more details, too, on Yuri Berliner, the former senior editor at NPR. I've covered this story a little bit earlier in the week. He reported that in a document called NPR Transgender Coverage Guidance disseminated by news management, they were asked to avoid the term biological sex. What? Why? Why? Because it hurts your narrative? It hurts your agenda? It hurts what you're trying to advance? A little bit of truth is not good for what you're trying to advance, right? Biological. Oh, we can't talk about biological sex. There's no such thing as biological sex. Look, it's a truly ideological organization. You know, if you can't call biological sex, there's something wrong. Why do we have to deny the truth? Why? Why do you have to deny the truth? That's what's happening there. One final story. Father Tabo Holchek's going to be coming. We can get his take on that as well. Britain is effectively trying to outlaw smoking. Did you hear about this? Maggie, were you a smoker? I bet you were at one point. Yeah. Are you laughing? Did you smoke cigarettes at some point? I'm not talking about weed. I'm talking about tobacco.
I did smoke some cigarettes in That's my so early funny. 20s.
Was it hard to get off? Or you were
No, you know what? I think I just made my mind up. I was like, you know what? I got to stop doing this. And then I stopped. I told myself I'm not going to buy a pack anymore. So then there was like maybe 6 months where when I would see someone that was smoking, I'd bum a cigarette. But then after that, I was just like, nah, I'm done.
Not good for you. You've been able to rise above a lot of different vices. Yeah. So let me share this story with you. Give me your take on this real quick. It says there's a new law that says that anyone born in 2009 or later can't buy cigarettes. This is Britain. And if you go abroad, you bring them back, you're okay. But shops that sell them to anyone, to anybody who's underage, is, I think they're fined £1,000 or £100 or something like that. Dude. On the spot. And then they'll be subjected to an even bigger fine, £2,500 imposed by a court. That's for anyone 2009. I don't have all the story data in front of me, but I had heard that they're going to continue to change the age of this to the point where smoking is going to be illegal.
Wow.
You think the government should say, hey, this is a public health concern, so we're going to make smoking illegal. They're going to do it gradually, constantly raising that age so that, you know,
very
no longer
interesting.
Smoke. I don't know if I'm a fan of that. You know, I
this is in Britain, right?
This is Britain.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not a fan of cigarette smoke personally, so I love to see people not smoke for their own health. Mm-hmm. But the government's getting involved. So.
Interesting.
Yeah, it is interesting. You could debate that. There's pros and cons, I guess, to both sides. Hey, I want to talk about one other story here with Father Tad Paholchek, and it deals with brain death. It's something that we talked about in the past. You know, I'm an organ donor, and every time I talk about this issue, it gives me pause, you know, and people are like, why are you an organ donor? Why are you praying for, you know, organ donation during the chaplet, people say. You know, why are you praying this, you know, for that person that needs a liver transplant or whatever it may be? So I thought I'd revisit this with Father Tad today. And I'll tell you what, I'm going to take a quick break. When we come back, I'll explain what's going on here and we can get your take on this as well. Plus, I want to post for you a little bit later a statue that has no explanation. You know, I don't know how to explain this. I've talked to you about statues that have wept and have cried. I've done a documentary on that past. There's been statues that survived bomb blasts and tsunamis. Wait till you hear this story. It's kind of a cool one. That'll come up a little bit later. But stay with me. I'm going to take a very short break. We'll be back with more right after this.
Your news. The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Your news now.
Sponsor of the University of Dallas, the Catholic University for Independent Thinkers. Invites high school juniors, seniors, and recent graduates to study the great books this summer at UD's two-week-long Arete program while earning 3 hours of college credit. Info at relevantradio.com/UDallas.
All the news and issues
now
that are happening now.
One place. The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Now.
Hey, thanks for joining me. Good to be here with you again today. The chaplet is about 35 minutes away. If you have a special need, we'll be praying for you. Tell one other person about it today, all right? Let's continue to build that spiritual family. Maybe it's your son, your daughter, your spouse, somebody who's sick. Let's amplify our voice. We'll pray together. Cannot wait to do that. It's the highlight of my time with you every day. Hey, I've talked on this program many times in the past about brain death. And it can be a confusing issue to some people. We're all going to experience it, right? I happen to be an organ donor. Some people get mad because I mentioned that. Some people, you know, think I shouldn't pray for it during the chaplet. And I want to talk about this a little bit before a couple of influential medical societies are trying to change the definition of brain death right now. And before your eyes glaze over, all right, before you're ready to turn the station, hang on for a second. Okay, consider this. What if, I'm going to throw out a hypothetical here, God forbid you were in a very serious car accident. In fact, I was driving in the studio today and I saw a huge car accident. It was horrible, and I don't know whether the person survived or not. So I prayed my chaplet of divine mercy at that very moment for that soul, especially if God was taking him home. But let's say you're driving home, you know, and suddenly this happens. They take you to a hospital. The doctors say there's nothing that could be done for you. And if those changes to, you know, brain death, you know, are implemented and your license says you're an organ donor, you won't have to be completely brain dead before they take your liver and your heart and give it to someone else. And that's the concern a lot of people have, right? Right now, under the Uniform Declaration of Death Act of 1981, death is defined as, quote, irreversible. The irreversible shutdown of circulatory and respiratory functions. In other words, your heart stops and you stop breathing or you shut down on all the functions of the entire brain, including the brainstem. But here's the thing, all right? If the American Academy of Neurology, the Child Neurology Society, and the Society of Critical Care Medicine have their way, that definition is going to be revised. Listen to what they want to say. This is the sentence I'll lift right out of it. They revised it to, quote, permanent cessation of circulatory and respiratory function or permanent coma. Yeah, repeat that, permanent coma. Yeah, there's been people in coma for years that have come out of it, right? Cessation of spontaneous respiratory functions and loss of brainstem reflexes. In other words, you wouldn't have to be completely dead, right, in order to have your vital organs harvested. I'm joined right now by Father Tad Pahulchak. He is senior ethicist at the National Catholic Bioethics Center, and you can check him out at ncbcenter.org. He writes a column. Check him out, fathertad.com. And I thought we'd just get some clarity from him today on this issue. Father, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Drew. Good to join you.
So, I mean, give us a 101. This can kind of get in the weeds, and I want it to be understandable to everyone about how death is defined and then why three medical societies would want to change the definition of brain death.
Yes. Well, I think this is important to be clear that for a long time, there's been really pretty much a unanimous agreement in the medical field regarding the fact that a person could be declared dead validly when they had lost all these functions of the brain. So in other words, you have irreversible cessation of all functions of the entire brain, and there aren't any sort of exceptions out there that you could then say, well, if some part of your brain is still working, nevertheless, we're going to go ahead and declare you dead. That, you know, there was always pushback against that kind of an approach. But what we're seeing now is that there is a part of your brain that it appears the current testing regime sometimes fails to notice that part of your brain is still working. It's called the hypothalamus. It's kind of a lower part of your brain. And when this happens, there is now pressure afoot to say, well, you know, this is kind of close enough. And if everything else, all the other tests indicate that your brain's not working, but even if you do have the hypothalamus still working, well, we think we should be able to declare you dead and take organs and proceed with transplants. So this is something we've just issued a statement about at the National Catholic Bioethics Center. You know, it's a longer statement, really directed more to specialists, but it's right on our homepage, ncbcenter.org. And we're saying, look, what's important here is for medical professionals, especially those who set the standards for brain death, and this means in particular the American Academy of Neurology, the AAN, they're sort of the big force in this, that they should not move ahead in promoting this kind of a change. And I mean, unfortunately, they already have. So this is the kind of thing that needs to be undone. And we need to move in the direction now of saying to people, look, we have to require the loss of the function of the hypothalamus as well, and probably have some, you know, good testing that'll give us certitude. Yes, even that part of the brain is gone. And then we'll be able to say with, you know, certainty, moral certainty or prudential certainty, as we sometimes say, this person is dead and it's okay to harvest organs, to take organs, because before they died, they said, yeah, I want to be an organ donor. Or their appointed proxy who's making decisions for them says, yeah, this was something they wanted to do. They wanted to donate organs. That'll be fine. So we don't want here to sort of blur the lines. And that's what the concern is around these recent developments that the American Academy of Neurology has been pushing.
If you want to join us, if you have a question, I'll be more than glad to take your call. The number is 888-914-9149. We're taking a look at brain death and where the church stands on this, as well as what laws are now being passed. And, you know, Maggie and I were talking as we were getting ready for the show about this particular issue. And Maggie says, it doesn't seem like we're a lot different than China if this happens. Before I grab Ryan and everybody else, just very quickly, are there documents, are there... You know, are there any teachings that support, you know, the Catholic Church's position, their acceptance of brain death criteria as true death?
Yes, there certainly are. There was an important statement from Pope John Paul II. It was a statement in the year 2000, and he basically pointed out that that the Church has long encouraged organ transplantation, and he laid out, you know, some of the key principles and said that that brain death is an ethically acceptable way to determine that somebody is deceased. And really the Church's approach has always been to say, this is a clinical question. You know, what are all the signs that death has already occurred? And the Pope, you know, leans, and the whole church always leans heavily on the medical profession here and says, you know, this is something that is not a theological question. It's a question that relies on figuring out when the functions of the body have ceased in a way that is irreversible. And brain death is compatible with that understanding of death. And, you know, you can say, well, there's something theological, obviously, because when somebody dies, it's the departure of the soul from the body. Yes, that's true, but we're not able to see souls. Mm-hmm. Souls are immaterial, so we have to rely upon a careful assessment of our bodies and determine when all the functions have stopped. And at that point, we can have certainty that the soul has left the body.
All right. Ryan is in Wisconsin. If you want to join us, by the way, 888-914-9149. Hi, Ryan. Good afternoon.
Hey, good afternoon, guys. How are you guys?
We're well, thanks. Thanks for dialing in.
Great.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you. I just wanted to call in, basically because I am a heart transplant survivor. I was diagnosed at 18, just graduated high school, with a virus that instead of, you know, giving me a cough or the flu, it actually attacked my heart muscle. Destroyed my heart completely. After that, I completely was put into the hospital for almost a year and 2 months, waiting on the organ. And the Lord blessed me with an organ after a year and 2 months of waiting in the hospital. So that was the biggest issue for me, is on the organ donation part of it. I hear people lots of times, oh, I don't want an organ donor, you know, especially when you go to the DMV or something like that. I'm just like, you know, I usually stand up. I'm like, hey, organ donation saved my life. I've had a wife. I'm married for 21 years. I have two boys. I worked for 18 years. So it's just kind of a thing that sets me off a little bit. You know, I don't know how to say it, I guess. You could say some people are completely off on it and other people are all for it. There's no like gray area I see, just from, you know, from what I can tell.
Well, I'm delighted you called. Congratulations on having a beautiful family, and God clearly Wanted to extend your days, Ryan, no doubt about it. Father, let's talk about it because Ryan is one of those people who has benefited from somebody else's willingness to share their heart. And as I said, I'm an organ donor right now. Should people be concerned about organ donation? Or is there something we need to do in our documentation to make sure that if we're in that situation, we're truly dead? Whoever's in charge of our end-of-life directives or whatever it might be. I mean, what are the safeguards and what do you have to say about organ donation in those lists?
So I think Ryan's story is very helpful, very instructive, and a reminder to us of how really organ donation is, as John Paul II one time said, it's a particularly praiseworthy example of everyday heroism. And, you know, this really does offer the chance of health, renewed health, and even of life itself to people who are sometimes very, very sick, like Ryan, you know, was. So this is a powerful, generous act when a decision is made to be an organ donor. So there's not a kind of core objection to donating unpaired organs once you're deceased. What we're concerned about is the question of when are you deceased? And we want to, you know, the National Catholic Bioethics Center in our statement remind people that the requirements for determining death need to be stringent. They need to be carefully respected. And there is this move afoot to alter those criteria in such a fashion that an individual would not be completely brain dead, and they might still be declared dead for the purposes of getting organs. So this should be a concern to all of us, you know, from Ryan to everyone else out there, because what does this do? It makes people who are thinking about donating their organs say, oh, well, maybe I shouldn't, because I'm not going to be sure whether somebody is actually dead prior to, and then whether, you know, they would take my organs ahead of time. So, we can understand that kind of fear and hesitation on the part of people who think about this. So I think it is important, and most important, that those in the field maintain the integrity of this. But you're asking a kind of more practical question. What about my documents? You know, what about at the end of life? I think this is an area where in one's end of life documents, it's good to say something like, you know, I want the church's teachings on determining end of life, on determining death, to be respected in my own situation. I want, you know, to follow what the church teaches about decision making at the end of life, because sometimes those decisions are complicated. And I think putting that in writing can be helpful, especially if it's your kids who may be designated as the ones to make decisions. And, you know, sometimes the younger generation may not be well informed on these issues, and putting a line or two like that, they may say to themselves, gee, I got to get up to speed on what the church really does hold here. And, you know, I'd mentioned briefly, Drew, I've put out a video on YouTube called The Grace of Dying Well, or The Gift of Dying Well, and, you know, goes through really for anyone who's interested, what are the requirements around, for example, can I turn off a ventilator at the end of life? What is an ordinary, what is an extraordinary procedure, et cetera? And also on brain death and death itself, you know, I touch on those areas as well. And this has, I've already, you know, encountered people who have said, I'm asking my kids to watch your video so that they can learn really where the church is coming from on these issues. And they'll do better decisions on my behalf if I become incapacitated and not able to make my own decisions.
Well, let's do this. We'll grab a few more calls. Ryan, thank you for sharing with us. John is in the City of Brotherly Love in Philly. John, good afternoon.
Thanks, fellas. This is such an important issue. Thank you. Just a quick question, not an easy answer, maybe. I'm told that they can only take organs from living people. Now, I know you can be kept on a breath, you know, a unit to help you breathe, you know, so. But is that, you know, is that extraordinary? It seems like they're calling many things extraordinary when, you know, food and water should be ordinary in the ordinary status. So
yeah, great question.
If you could comment on that, that would be very helpful.
Hey, John, thank you. So, Father, that's such a great point. I mean, many argue you can only harvest an organ from a living person. The window for that is relatively short. So that's the concern about premature, you know, surgery or removal of those vital organs. But to John's point, how do you address it? How do you clarify that?
Yeah, John's question is a great one. And I think a lot of people do have that perception, but that's actually a misunderstanding, in the sense that you can be deceased, you can have died, and there will still be life in some of your organs. Mm-hmm. That's definitely a possibility. Otherwise, you know, if you had to have every single cell in every single organ of every single tissue of your body already dead and, you know, decomposition occurring, that would mean you couldn't do a transplant. But it turns out that as an organism means organized in a way that, mm-hmm. you know, works in an interdependent manner among all the organs to keep the system going, that's no longer possible. And this is typically the case when you have brain death, because when your brain dies, you no longer can breathe on your own. That center of your brain that helps you to take breaths is deceased. You're deceased. And if you, you know, in that very narrow window of time before death takes over all the other organs, if you can get a person onto a ventilator, sometimes you can extend the functioning of those lower organs long enough that they could be transplanted into another person who would benefit from them. So you're already dead. You died, you know, earlier, but you were able to get oxygen to some of your lower organs and keep those subsystems functioning.
All right. Hey, John, thank you for your call. Great question. Francis is in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Hey, Francis.
Hey, good afternoon. I have a question. My nephew, who was 19 years old, was hit by a car and was thrown to the side of the road when the gentleman or the man that hit him called the police, because he was not even illegal, but he had the good state of mind to call the police. They came and got him. When they got him, they said his brain was like a can of stewed tomatoes. They took him to the hospital, obviously, and my sister did not like the way the nurses and the doctors treated him, so they took him home. And for going on 21, 22 years, they have been taking care of him. Now, he cannot speak. He cannot function. He's in a catatonic state. He's his hands are atrophied. And he cannot, without the ventilator, he will not live. But they refused to take him off the ventilator. They said that as long as he's got a breath in his body, he will survive. So they will not take him off. And the poor man now, who's in his 40s now, is 19, he doesn't have quality of life. He's got nothing. He's just laying in bed. They have to change him. They have to feed him. They have gave him everything.
It's rough.
And my sister said, you know, be careful what you wish for when he was younger, because she always wished that her boys were, you know, babies again.
Right.
And now he's like a baby in his 40s. So, he cannot do anything.
Francis, let me let Father Polchek respond, because I have a moment or two before I have to take a short pause. He's in a catatonic state, horrible existence right now.
Right. Let me jump in, Drew, here. So, Francis, thank you for that example. I think it reminds us that sometimes people do lose a lot of brain function. They have, you know, a badly injured brain. Now, does that mean that if they have a bad injury to their brain, that we shouldn't take care of them? No, of course not. And, you know, the situation you're describing, I mean, it's very difficult to care for someone for a long period of time when they have many needs. But I think, you know, this individual, your family there has done a generous job of taking care of this individual. Yeah. You know, and as you say, it's been 20 years now, 21 years that he's been taken care of well, and, you know, been on a ventilator. Yes. And that's a difficulty, but he's not dead. He's not deceased. He deserves care. He deserves our love. And, you know, the family that loves him is really giving a powerful witness, I think, to all of us of the sacredness of human life. And those who are involved in the long-term care of patients who have severe brain injuries, those people are doing a great work. And any family, you know, that is providing that kind of care is doing a great and holy work, loving them until the Lord calls them home. And that is clearly not a case of brain death. That's what's important to understand here. An individual like that cannot donate organs. They're still alive. And the ventilator is, you know, supporting the rest of their body, but also supporting functions in their brain. Because if you're genuinely brain dead and you're on the ventilator, you can only survive like that for a limited period of time. Usually it's a matter of hours or days. And then after that, even though you're on the ventilator, the rest of your body comes apart at the seams and you can't survive. So him surviving 20 years obviously is an example not of brain death, but of an injury, and a bad injury to his brain.
Father, hold the thought. I'm going to take a short pause. When we come back, I'll take a few more telephone calls. I only have a few minutes of Father Behold Check. If you want to join us, this is your chance to get in at 888-914-9149. We'll pray the chaplet at the top of the hour. I want to talk about the soul as well, the human soul. When does it leave the body? At what point, after a person is dead, is the soul separated from the body? Is it moments before? Is it at the same time? What do we know? What does the church teach? We'll explore that and more.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
This hour is sponsored by Ave Maria Mutual Funds, where financial goals are aligned with pro-life values and fund decisions are based on investment fundamentals designed to preserve and grow wealth without violating moral beliefs. More information at AveMariaFunds.com.
The Chaplet of Divine Mercy, coming up live.
Yeah, that powerhouse prayer is about 10 minutes away. Be sure and tell one other person. We'll join together and we will pray for God's mercy. Great things are happening during the chaplet. I'm so grateful to be able to stop and to spend a few minutes invoking God's mercy together for each other. And as I said, tell others and send me your answer prayers, send your petitions in. We'll get to all that coming up. If you're just joining me, maybe you're tuning in a little bit early before the chaplet, we're delving into a profoundly challenging and deeply ethical issue. And it's one I believe that touches on both our understanding of life and our faith, and that's the church's teaching on brain death. Right? It's a topic that can be very complex, and I've invited Father Tapaholchek to join me today. He'll take a few of your calls. If you've got a question, a comment, or an insight on this, we're taking a look at the ethics of being an organ donor, what science says about true death. What is considered true death? What does the church teach regarding this? And Father, it's great to have you. I want to jump back into the phones, and then I want to talk to you a little bit about the soul and what part that departs the body. George is in New York City. He's been waiting for a while. George, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Drew. Couple of things I want to throw out. My understanding is if someone has a heartbeat, that person is alive. They're not dead. So that's. I just want to open with that. The second thing I want to say is, people who have organ donor on their driver's license, if there's a car accident, a massive car accident, they're brought to the hospital. Many times, all the organs are harvested. The family gets to the hospital, and they said, what happened? The person has already been harvested. There's no chance to call a priest to anoint them. This, to me, is a travesty. This is a scam to get organs. This is murder. That's all I want to say, Drew.
I love your passion, George. Father, I'll let you respond.
Yes, well, grateful for George's call. However, his statement that anybody who has a heartbeat is not dead, that is a categorically false statement. That's not a statement that would be compatible with church teaching or understanding of the medical profession about human death. It is possible for there to be a heartbeat. You can have a heart that is taken from one person and put into another. And, you know, that heart could be kept beating even, in some sense during the transfer. So, you know, this idea that this is the real indicator of a person being alive is not accurate. The concern he raises about not getting an anointing done. So first, the presupposition here, he's implying that the organs are being taken right away after a massive car accident, without, due respect for the question of whether they're dead. And I think that is problematic as a universal claim. In other words, sure, there may be some cases once in a while where the medical profession fails to respect the proper criteria for determining death. But if they've determined validly that a person died because of that car accident, you can't anoint a dead body. You know, the sacraments are for the living, not for the deceased. So once a person is dead, you can't anoint them. You can say prayers for the deceased, for the good of their soul, which has left their body. So I think George, you know, didn't maybe acknowledge this important distinction here, that if somebody is in fact deceased, that's not the time that you call the priest to do an anointing. You call the priest prior to their death. And then, of course, they can benefit sacramentally from receiving that anointing from the priest.
Right.
So I think that helps clarify those lines there, that once an individual has died, then it is, if they have given consent, allowable to take their organs for the benefit of another individual. And that does include a heart that, you know, if they've been hooked up onto the ventilator and that heart of theirs is still receiving oxygen thanks to the ventilator and, you know, continuing to function for a little while, it would be allowable if they had given permission to do the transplant.
I only have a few minutes. George, thank you for your call. We could talk a lot longer on that, but I want to get to the human soul for a moment. And let me just share what the Catechism of the Catholic Church teaches. It says this. It says the unity of the soul and the body is so profound that one has to consider the soul to be the form of the body, i.e. it is because of its spiritual soul that the body made of matter becomes a living human body. Spirit and matter in man are not two natures united, but rather their union forms in a single nature. So let's talk about the human soul for a second. In a tragic accident, at what point does the soul leave the body? Is it with brain death? What do we know? Does the church speak to this at all regarding the moment that the soul actually departs the body?
So the church doesn't specify the precise moment because the church recognizes that we cannot measure or otherwise visualize a soul. A soul is immaterial, and therefore what we can do is those signs that tell us that the soul departed the body at an earlier time, we can read those signs. So let's say, you know, you get to the car accident scene and you get there kind of late, and maybe the person's body is lying on the pavement and you grab one of the arms to pick them up and you realize, oh my goodness, the whole body is hard with rigor mortis. Now, can you say exactly when the soul left that body that's in front of you? No, but you can say, I have moral certainty, thanks to the rigor mortis, that the soul left this body at an earlier time point that I cannot precisely specify. This is the same thing when you have a cessation of the beating of the heart and the movement of the lungs. So if you lose cardiopulmonary functioning and you lose that for, you know, a good, let's say, 15 minutes, not a single breath is taken, and the heart has not beat in that time, a doctor will come in and say, okay, I'm going to declare death. Now, can that doctor tell you precisely when the soul left? No, but he has moral certitude that sometime in that 15 minutes preceding, the soul left the body, and he makes that declaration of death, and the person is taken to the morgue. So what the church indicates is we can read those signs that the soul has left the body.
You know, it's interesting, and I'll throw this out, and again, this is all very subjective. I've had conversations with many people who've had near-death experiences, and whether they're in a violent car accident that resulted ultimately in the end of their life, or whether people, even plane accidents, there was a woman who was plane went down in Colorado, hit a bunch of trees. They've said in these near-death experiences, they were dead for 20, 30 minutes at some periods of time. They described all fear just prior to that violent death disappearing. And they said they felt their soul leave their body. They could actually see that plane clip the top of those trees and burst into flames, or the car smash into the barrier, or whatever it may be, as they described it to me. Is it possible the soul, if, you know, God's in control of everything, is it possible the soul can leave seconds before a violent accident or an imminent death?
That typically would not be the case, because in order for the soul to leave the body, you need to have the loss of integrated functioning. So if you're just about to crash and you're just looking out the window, your soul cannot just jump out of your body. That's not how it works. The soul is the principle of organization and integration.
We only have 2 minutes, so let me interrupt you just because I want to make sure I get to this point. What about the people who say, hey, look, I was on an operating table.
Yeah,
and I can tell you about the sneaker on the roof, or I heard conversation 30 miles away where my family was, and they recount these things. How do you account for those experiences?
So those experiences, Drew, likely represent the situation where the brain is under extreme stress and is experiencing, you know, various types of activities that might resemble even hallucinations and other types of occurrences.
Oh, I don't know. We'll have to talk about this at greater length because I'm up against the clock right now.
Yes, only 30 seconds.
No, I would love to dive into this because, you know, Father Spitzer, who I'm sure you're very familiar with too, has often shared many of those accounts with me, but I find it fascinating subject matter. Father, thank you. Best way to learn about brain death is ncbcenter.com or .org?
.org and also fathertad.com.
All right, fathertad.com. ncbcenter.org. Always great to have you here, Padre. We'll catch up soon. I'm going to pray the chapel. I'll remember you in my prayers, okay?
Thank you so much.
You got it. Top of the hour. Stay with me. Father Richard Simon's going to be stopping by. He wants to send you a message. Don't go away.